We are holding on Kufsa Zayin Omid Beis, 5 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah about the case, where, about the concept of writing a shover. We said that you write a receipt for a woman that she had sort of paid off. We talked about that you can write it for her even if we don't have her husband there, and we discussed the ins and outs of that in the Gemara yesterday. We said that actually you do need to know that this is actually who she, that she's actually who she claims she is, and who her husband is. So, Hahu Tavra, the Havachosim Alei Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba. There was a certain shover where Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba was one of the people signed after the Kameh Hahi. Later on, the woman whose name was written on this shover came in front of Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba for a din Torah to demand her silver payment. Amrile, and she said to him, Lava no havoi. That wasn't me. Maybe there was somebody else. There was some other woman who had the same name as me and the same name as
me. It
wasn't me who got the shover that I had been paid off my ksuba. I've never been paid off my ksuba. Wait. Omar, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba says, Anonami Amrilahu Lav Ihihi. You know what? There's the Rashbam versus the Raman, many of the other Rishonim. So let's first talk according to the Rashbam, what happened over here in the story. He says, I started to say just now to the other Edim who are signed with me on the shover that Ataka wasn't you. Because Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Abba is saying, He says, at first, for a second over here, I thought you had a point that it's that attacker wasn't you. Why? Because I didn't recognize your voice or your looks. And in fact, that Ivan points out what may have happened over here. This woman may have been a neighbor of his, so he would expect to recognize her voice. And like this, he didn't. So he's saying, I thought to say that you're taka right. It must be somebody else who received that shover. It wasn't me. But Omruli, but the other Adim have just now told me, Mekashu the Koshala, no, she's gotten older. Or Bagala Kala, and therefore her voice has changed, as people's voice tends to change when they get older.
Makish,
Mekashu the Koshala, she became old. The Shurdish Kufshin in Aramaic means old. Mekashu de Kashala, she's gotten old. Or Bagala Kola. The Shurdish Kufshin in Aramaic means old. Mekashu de Kashala, it's age, it's old age, but she's become old. Or Bagala Kola, and her voice has therefore changed because of her age. In other words, therefore, so the other Adim are telling me. The other Adim have just informed me that I'm mistaken. The fact that I don't recognize your voice does not mean that it's not that it wasn't you who received the shofar. It is in fact you. You're not telling me the truth. It was in fact you are the one who received the shofar, and therefore you've already had your ksuba paid off. That's how the Rashbam understands the story. The Yad Ramah and the Nemuka Yosef and a number of other Rishonim understand it actually kind of the other way around. That he's saying that originally I thought that it's the other way around. Originally, when the shtar was signed, I was suspicious. Is that the same one? Is that the same person? Is this my neighbor or whatever? Or is it somebody else pretending to be her? The other agent convinced me. The fact that I don't recognize the voice doesn't mean anything because you've gotten old and therefore your voice has changed. Now, when you come with your claim, I realize that after all, my original suspicion was correct, and Yutaka did not receive the shofar, and it was somebody else who received it in your name. So the drisha on Torah in Choshen Mishpat has a very, very long discussion of all the ins and outs of the story based on what the Gemara is going to say now about the what results from this in Halacha. One thing is that a number of the Mefarshim point out, you have to say then, if you go according to that version, evidently Yirmiyahu ben Abba, when he was originally told that this is her, this isn't her, as the case may be, it can't have actually been two kosher agents who said that. Because if it was, then there's nothing to talk about. Then he can't retract. And the Gemara is going to now say that he is able to retract from what he said. You would have to say, therefore, that you're able to accept when you're accepting eidos, that this is somebody or this is not somebody on the basis of their voice or whatever. You can even have apostle aid, you can have another woman say it or whatever, and therefore Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'ava is not necessarily bound by that, and he's able to change his mind. So the Judish has a very long explanation where he says, if you go with the Rashbam's explanation of the story, you don't really have a proof to that din one way or the other. Only if you go with the Ramaz and the Mugi Yosef's explanation, the second explanation of the story, only then does it work to say that way. That's a big nafkamina. So that actual din that you can rely on an Isher or an Eved or one aid or what have you to identify somebody by their voice or whatever, that is brought there in Shulchan Aruch, lahalach. Which means, to that extent at least, we accept that understanding of the story.
From the
Nimuke Yosef and the Ramah, yeah.
But there's nothing in the Nida about checking a girl that's 12 about relying on a female.
That's a different thing. I mean, when you have to do a bedika, that's Shtei Cyrus, of necessity, you have to have women do it and be Samech on them because you don't have a choice. But here we're talking about to be able to identify whether this is her or this isn't her based on her voice. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Omer Abaya. Incidentally, by the way, the Judisha, in the course of discussing this, mentions a different girsa over here, that it wasn't Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'ava. He says that his girsa was that it was Rabba Bar Chana. Okay. Anyway.
Omer Abaya. Yeah.
Omer Abaya. Even though the Rabbanon say, as we have as a general rule, that, and it's not really Midrash, it's not Midrabanon, we say the Rabbanon say it because the Rabbanon are the ones who darshan it from the Pesukim. It's actually a din d'oraisa, that once an aid has said eidos, he's not able to retract and say a different eidos. So therefore, on the face of it over here, then, if Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'ava or Hanan Bar Rava first said one way or the other that this is her, this isn't her, how is he able to change his mind? However, when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, it's not typical for him to closely check, to know, to recognize women so much by their looks or their voices or what have you, because it's near. Therefore, in other words, so again, with the Rashbam's explanation, when he originally thought to say it's not her, then we discount that. No, yes, he's able to retract it because he's a Talmud Chacham, and I can't expect him to be so familiar with the looks and the voices of women. So according to the Rashbam, it means, in other words, he's able to say, after all, it was you who received the shtar, and therefore that's it. Your husband has a shtar saying that he paid, a shover saying that he paid off your ksuba, so therefore that's it. Or according to the Raman, and Mokhi Yosef, the other way around, that even though I thought originally that it was you, now I realize it's not you, and we can accept that. I can retract from what I said before and be able to say that it wasn't you and you haven't received your ksuba yet. Hold on. We're saying specifically in the case of a Talmud Chacham. Let's see the next story, and we'll see further details in that. Another case, there was another case where, again, there was a shofar that Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'ava was signing on it. Again, the woman says, it wasn't me. And this time he says to her, Ivra, indeed, antava, it was you. Ivra means indeed, or it means it's body to me, it's clear to me, whatever. I know for a fact that it was you. Don't try playing games. Amr Abaya says, Afagab the Tsuhim and Abanam Lab Urchadami. That even though it is true, as we just said, that a Talmud Chacham usually is not necessarily going to necessarily be so precise in checking, nevertheless, Kivin the duck. But once he does check carefully, once he says that in this particular case I did check, then that's it. Then there's no going back. So in other words, in the first case, if he had known for sure to begin with that it was her, that it wasn't her, as the case may be, that's it. There's no going back.
Wait a minute. You have to say duck.
Given the duck. Usually it's not darkly sakaba, and usually it's not the derech of a Talmud Chacham to be looking closely at women. However, if he says, in this case, he says specifically that I made sure to pay attention and look whether it's you or not. Maybe this happened after the previous story, so he realized he has to be more careful, whatever. Once he says that, then we have to assume that he was precise, and then it's like any other case of Kivin Shehigid Shuvein Chozer Umagid. Then we can't say that then we can't say that he's able to undo it and say, well, maybe I wasn't so precise after all, because if he says that I was precise, if he says that Ivra, I know for sure that it was you, then there's no going back on that.
The Shover has no signature on it?
The Shover doesn't have any, but the Shover has an Adim signature on it.
Adim.
It says Adim signature. It says that Rachel, the wife of Yaakov, received her tzuba on such and such a date, et cetera. It doesn't have a
signature. Her ID?
No. I mean, the Adim, again, as we said yesterday, the Adim have to know that this woman is Rachel and that her husband's name is Yaakov. But there could be more than one Rachel and Yaakov, first of all. And again, that's it. There could have been another. There could have been another woman. There could have been another woman passing herself off as that. Whatever. Yeah. Okay. So that's the thing. Now it is true that it's not. We don't say for sure that a Tamar. We don't say that a Tamar Chacham is so unobservant that he's not going to notice at all. Because if that's the case, then what is Rabbi Abba doing in the first place, saying that I know it's you, I know it's not you? They kind of know, but they're not so medayic necessarily.
Not enough
to be able to say for sure that they might not realize that they made a mistake. However, if he specifically says that I did, then that's it. Then he doesn't have the ability. He doesn't have the ability to change his mind afterwards. Amar Abayas. Abayas says, here's a din that comes out from this, by the way. When a Tamar Chacham is going to be Makadosh a woman, Nidbar Amha'aretz Ba'adeh, he should take along with him an Amha'aretz to recognize her. Because otherwise they might switch her off afterwards. In other words, what's going to happen? He's going to go be Makadosh a woman, but being a Tamar Chacham, he's not used to looking closely at her. So therefore, later on they may end up giving him a different woman, and he won't realize the difference.
Sounds familiar.
Well, you have the case of Yaakov with Rachel, although that's there. And well, there it's a little bit different. There it's not a question of recognizing her. There it was a knife. But it's interesting. The Rambam mentions the halacha that you're allowed to look into in the face of a pnuya and look at her to see whether you like her looks or whatever, and whether you want to marry her. The Ravid says, what about our Gemara over here?
Very
so the Magen Mishnah says a very interesting answer. We're talking about to get married over here. We're talking about he's going to be Makadosh a woman. That's what the Rambam's talking about. So the Rambam says as a blanket statement, you're allowed to do that. The Ravid says, what about our Gemara over here? Our Gemara is implying that Tamar Chacham shouldn't do it. He should take along an Amara for that purpose. The Magen Mishnah gives a very interesting answer. He says, obviously, the Rambam would say, obviously, it can't be an Iser to look at a woman's face when it's for a purpose like that. Otherwise, how are you doing Lufna Ivalai Sukhan Miksha? You can't bring along an Amara and tell him to do an Aveda on your behalf. Must be that it is mutter, as the Rambam is saying. What are we saying in our Gemara over here? We're saying no. The Tamar Chacham himself, sure, he could look at her. The problem is, because the Tamar Chacham is not used to looking at other women, he's not necessarily going to be able to tell. If they send him another one instead when it comes time for the wedding, he's not going to know the difference, because he only knows her face. He doesn't know the faces of any other women. Therefore, bring along an Amaret who knows the faces of other women as opposed to this one, and therefore he'll be able to notice what the difference is. So we see from that, the Magen Mishnah says, Fakir. You see from this Gemara that the Rambam is right, that Itaka isn't an Isser to do that. Otherwise, you can't have an Amaret do it for you either. Okay. Hold on. We learned in Kiddushin that you're not allowed to marry a woman until you've looked at her. Fine. The Ravid is not saying you're not allowed to. The Ravid presumably is not saying you're not allowed to look at her either. He would just say you look at her briefly. You take a quick look to see whether at least she looks. Whether at least you don't want to have that afterwards. There's going to be friction. There would be a lack of the hafalut that you find something dove mugunan or whatever. But he would say, based on this Gemara over here, that evidently it's a Tamar Chacham shouldn't be looking too closely. Okay. All right. Then we said in the mission of Abal Nois and Bichav. Well, so that's the thing. So that I would ask, why didn't the Rambam mention that detail? And again, the Magen Mishnah says, because we're not saying there's not a difference in the halacha between a Tamar Chacham and an Amoret. It's practicality, because a Tamar Chacham, as we say in our Gemara, is not used to looking at women. Therefore, he needs the Amoret alone to be able to help identify it's her as opposed to somebody else when it comes time for the wedding. Okay, we said in the Mishnah of Abal Nois and Tzchavachol, we said in the Mishnah that the husband is the one who pays for the writing of the get. Question is, my timer. The reason is Damakra Bakasa Vinasan, because the Pasuk says he should write and he should give. So he, meaning the husband, writes it. Now he doesn't write it himself. He has the sofer write it. But the point is he's the one who tells the sofer to write it. Therefore, he's also the one who should be giving the money to the sofer. The Gemara actually in Gittin mentions an interesting statement in the Gemara there where Rav Chisda says, in principle, I could find a way to passel every get that's given nowadays. And Rava discusses with him, are you saying on the basis of this? Not necessarily, because Vinostam in the Pasuk doesn't necessarily mean to give the money. It means to give the get. And the husband does that. He does physically give the get to his wife, usually. But still, our Gemara is taking it in the sense that it means that he should be the one paying the sofa. Okay, the question is, what about nowadays? We don't do that anymore. The reason is, Shadur, Rabbanan Aisha, instead the Rabbanan imposed that the parasofa should be paid by the woman, that way the husband won't have an excuse to delay giving the get. Because he's saying, I don't have the money for the sofa.
I can't afford it right now.
Nonetheless, though, there is a good deal of discussion among Rishonim whether, nevertheless, we say that even so, it is preferable that the husband should pay, like we said in the Mishnah. If, for whatever reason, he's not, then we have the woman pay, and then maybe Hefker based in Hefker, and we consider the money to be his or whatever.
Is the mitzvah to get promptly? Outside of the union of Kriya.
Well, I mean, there's a matter of if she wants out, then, not necessarily. If she, whatever, it's not a matter of her wanting out necessarily, but whatever. If the marriage is going to be dissolved or whatever, then there's no reason to delay it any more than necessary. But,
how does that work with
Zera Ben and Gershom? Okay, I mean, so nowadays, since a woman can't be divorced against her will anyway, then, there is a bit of a discussion among the Rishonim, which is, if the get is being given Baal Kocha, which could have been before Chaim Deh Ben Gershom, for sure you can't make her pay, because then it's not the Tevot. Right. Then for sure you have to make him pay. So nowadays, where she can only be divorced Lo Tzona, the pashtus, it's still back to the basic din over here. In principle, the husband should be paying on the basis of a cost of the Natsam, but if not, then we yotzev the Natsam by him giving the get, and instead we have her pay.
Basically, we have the same issue that we have now. A lot of husbands weren't so forthcoming giving the get, I guess, because they're mad at the woman.
Yeah, whatever.
So the question is it a mitzvah to give a get promptly if you're not a Kohen?
I don't know. I mean, you could argue it's a matter of that you have to listen to Beis Din. If Beis Din tells you that you have to give a get, you should know something. The Rambam is a das yachid. The Rambam is a das yachid who holds that if a woman says, I want out of the marriage, I can't bear to live with my husband anymore, then that's it. She's entitled to a get. However, she loses her ksuba, as well as everything else that was brought into the marriage. All the other Rishonim and all the other poskim disagree with the Rambam and say, no, that's not a valid reason for her to get a get. There needs to be more grounds than that. To get a get in the first place, there needs to be more grounds than that.
Whatever
the various possible grounds are. Okay. Onward. Okay.
And the halacha is?
The halacha is not like the Rambam. The halacha is like all the other poskim. That if she demands a get just for no, without giving any other reason other than most alive, then that's not acceptable.
So she has to be caused by
that. That's sort of caused,
Usually there is cause.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But, yeah. Okay.
Not necessarily.
Okay. Let's okay. Onward. Okay. We said Kosman Shtar Loiva Afishain Malva Ibn Fuller. We said that you write a shtar for the Loiva even if the Malva is not with him. And we said the Loiva is the one who pays the Schar Sofer. So the question is Pshita. Isn't that obvious? Most of the Rishonim say the question Pshita is going on the fact that the Loiva pays for the shtar. Of course, he's the one getting the Hanah. Why do we think the Malva has to pay for it? There are a couple of the Rishonim who understand that the question is also on the detail that we're saying you're allowed to write it for the Loiva even without the Malva with him. Anyway,
obviously
you should be able to.
It's
a very fine. Yeah. Well, in other words, because the Loiva is doing it to his detriment if the Loiva writes the shtar, then it's to his detriment because he's the one who now says that he owes X amount of money even though he hasn't borrowed it yet. So we talked yesterday about the matter of Knunia and whatever, but still, basically you could understand why it can be written even without the Malva presence.
What's Knunia again?
Knunia is that we can make a trip. The Loiva can have a Knunia, that we can have a star written. Okay. Anyway, the answer is, Loitzricha be'iska. Yes, but the chiddush of the Mishnah is we're talking about not just a regular loan. We're talking about, for example, where they're doing an iska, where we learned about back in Bar Metziah, where you have an investor and a managing partner, where the managing partner is considered something we consider it half mil, but half pikadon, and then he's going to go and open a business and run it, and then they'll split the profits, and they do it. They have the various details that are needed to avoid the issue of ribbit. So there you would think that the malva is getting something out of it as well, because now his money is not just sitting there with nothing to do. Now it's being invested, so it'll earn a profit. You'd think he's getting something out of it. Therefore, you'd think maybe the shtar, maybe he pays for the shtar, or maybe he has to contribute towards the payment of the shtar. No, we say nevertheless they're not. And the Bimigash, there's a logical reason for it, because after all, even in the case of the Iska, the loiva, the managing partner, is getting more of a benefit out of it. The malva, the investor, has the money. He could be doing other things with it as well. The managing partner is the one who has to borrow it, because without that, he doesn't have any capital to run his business. Therefore, it's more logical. He's getting the greater ana out of it. Therefore, it's more logical that he has to want to be the one to pay for the shop.
In principle, it's the one who has ana from it.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
So the loiva or the...
By the way, as far after the thing with the shover, by the way, that we just said, Rabbi Negershim has a girsa over here that the Gemara then asked, what about the shover? When we say in the Mishnah that the habal moisin schar, that the husband pays, implying for the shover as well. Why should the husband have to pay for the shover? Isn't the woman getting the hanah from the shover? And his girsa continues. And the Gemara says, okay, since the Gemara started mentioning that the husband meant that husband pays by the get, then also it continues by saying the husband pays by the shover, even though that's not correct. The Rashbam says, I don't understand that girsa. So the Mishnah is not going to say something against the halacha just because since it said this way, therefore it's going to continue that way. So therefore the Rashbam takes out that whole thing, and that's why we don't have it in the Gemara. The Torah Chaim says, maybe though you can justify it on the basis of, we talked yesterday, that there are different circumstances when a shover is written. You can have a case where no psuga was written in the first place. In that case, then the shover, in a way, is a benefit to both of them. It's a benefit to her because it's a benefit more to him, actually, because it shows that he paid off the psuga and she doesn't have any ability to come later on and claim that I never received my psuga. As opposed to the case where a psuga is written and a shover is written only because she lost it. There the hanah is more on her side, because without a shover, and without a written ksuba, she's got nothing. So, okay. All right. Hello. Then we said, okay, we continued in the Mishnah, kosvit shtar lamorcher apishen lakeach. Before we said we can write a shtar for the seller even if the buyer is not present. And again, and we said the buyer is the one who gives the schar to the seller. Again, the question is pshita. Of course, he has the hanah on the face of it. Because you have a greater hana when you buy than when you have a greater hana when you buy than when you sell. The Rashbam in fact quotes from a pasuk in Yechezkel and a Gemara in Bava Metziah that says that you're better off when you're better off to be a buyer than to be a seller.
So the buyer pays for the shtar.
But the question is, why does the Mishnah have to tell us that? Isn't it fairly obvious? He's the one who has the greater hana. The answer is, yes, the chiddush is, what about a case where he's selling the field because it's bad, because there's something wrong with it, or it's too far away from his house, or whatever? Well, then maybe he has the greater, hanah. Maybe then the seller has the greater hanah, yeah.
Still we say that not.
Even so, we say that nevertheless, the lakeach still has the greater hanah.
The two happiest days of a man's life is when he buys his boat and sells his boat.
All right. Then we said, "Ein kosvin shtore erusin." Before we said, you're not allowed to write shtore erusin unless with the consent of both sides. And we said that shtore erusin, we mentioned yesterday two possibilities. The Rashbam says it means shtore psikta, shtar tsnoyim, where they agree that each side is going to pay X amount towards the expenses and towards the naden and so on and so forth. You had Rabbi Gershom's explanation that it meant actually the shtar that you use for kedushin, the shtar that has written in it harayat mekudeshes. Anyway, again, the question is pshita. Of course, we said that the chassan pays for the schar sefer. The question is pshita. Isn't that obvious? The answer is loy. Tzricha da'apilu tzurva mirabbanan. The chiddush is in the Mishnah. Even if the chassan is a tamid chacham, the nichalei lechamur lekeruvi, the father-in-law has the hanah from the fact that he's getting such a son-in-law, that he's getting such a tamid chacham as a son-in-law. You would think maybe therefore the father-in-law should be in that case the one who has to pay the schar sefer. No, nevertheless the chassan is still the one who has to pay the schar sefer. He's considered the one who has the greater hanah. And again, also, if we say that we're talking about if the Gemara's Pshita is going on the very fact of writing the Shtar in the first place, then it's a similar kind of thing. Lechura, isn't it obvious that you need the consent of both sides? Well, that was the reason we said yesterday. If we say that it means shtarip sikta, then yeah, if we say it means a shtar that says harayat nekudeshesli, then of course it has to be his shtar in order to give it to her. But if we're talking about shtarip tsnoyim, then not necessarily, but still, the point is, nevertheless, the chosen is considered the one with the greater hanah. Yeah, okay. But anyway, I was going to say that if we say that the Gemara's question, Pshita, is going on the very fact that the Shtar can only be written with the consent of both sides, then the question, Pshita, is that obviously, how can you write a Shtar Tznoyim without both sides having agreed to the terms? And the answer is, even if we're talking about the Chacham at the time of Chacham, you would think the parents of the Kala are very happy that they have such a son-in-law, and therefore maybe you would argue that Talmud Chacham's parents can write such a shtar unilaterally. No, it still has to be bilateral. They still have to both agree to it. Then we said in kotz and shtar arisus for kablonus. Before we said you can only write a shtar for arisus or kablonus, where one person is going to be working as an aris or a kablon in somebody else's field. We said that you only write it with the consent of both of them, and the aris is the one who has to pay the shkar sefer. So again, the question is meaning it has to be the consent of both. Yeah. So the question again is pshita. Isn't it obvious? Again, the question can either be, isn't it obvious that the Aureus has to pay the Schar Sefer, because he's the one who has the Hana, or you can say that the question is, isn't it Pshita that you can only write it with the consent of both of them, because until it's written, either side can retract. The answer is, Loi Tzricha B'Bura. Yes, but the Mishnah has to be telling us, even in a case of Bura, where it's a fallow field. So what does that mean? The Rashbam says it means like this. Suppose you have, the field has been overworked in previous years. Now, at the beginning of the term of Arisus or Kablonus, it's going to have to be left fallow for a year or two. Therefore, for the next year or two, the artist is not going to see any produce from it. He's going to be preparing for future years. You would think in that case he's not really having the hana. Maybe he shouldn't have to pay the Schar Sefer. Nevertheless, he does. Many of the other Rishonim have a different explanation that Bura over here means, suppose that the field has been fallow for the last few years. Imagine, for example, the Balabas for the last few years hasn't been able to find anybody to work the field for him, and he himself is too busy. So you would think, now he finally found somebody who's willing to be an artist in it, or who's willing to be a tablon in it, maybe he's the one who has the greater hana. Finally, his field is going to be worked. No, nevertheless, the artist is still the one who has the greater hana, because he has a steady job and a steady income, and therefore he's the one who has to pay the Schar Sefer. Then we said, "Ein kotz ben shtarid deiridim ela midas shneim." Before that, we said you can only write shtarid deiridim only with the das of both of them.
What about the
shtar shichur
for an eved?
What about it? But the eved doesn't have any nechasim of his own, so the master, I guess, the master would probably have to pay the shkar. So
that would be a big obstacle for the eved to overcome.
That's true, but well, maybe not. Actually, the Gemara discusses in a few places Abdu Batkeder Nichalei. Maybe an Eved prefers the life of Batkeder, but he has an Eved. The fact, for example, that he has much less restrictions as far as marriage and as far as relations. Yeah.
So it says that in Gittin.
Yeah, we learned it in a few places. Gittin, I think. Yeah.
So what's the answer to that? I mean, obviously, the Eved has
it's a machloket.
Maybe not. That's why you had the question. For example, can you write a shtar shichur for an eved without him being present? For example, zochem l'adam shalei b'fanav v'chovem l'adam. Okay.
Well, that's another question.
But that makes a big difference.
Then we can't go with the shichur anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the point the Gemara mentions over there.
Right? Yeah.
But then he's restricted on who he can marry. He can only marry a bachur.
Freedom is more important than that.
And that all depends.
He had a good relationship going with the shikhtar.
It all depends.
Yeah.
If you want to be crass about it, it depends whether he's speaking with his big head or his head.
A bachur and a shikhtar, you want to make up.
Okay, no, come on. Whatever. The fact of the matter is that when he's an Eved, he has a greater freedom as far as these kinds of things, and some of them like that kind of license. Okay, let's go on. Okay. So we said it. You don't write Shoreh Beirin only with the das of both of them. And here, by the way, the Yad Ramah points out that das over here means a little bit different than it did in the previous case in the Mishnah. In the previous case in the Mishnah, it meant it has to be with the consent of both of them. You can't write, for example, a shtar of tznoyim or a shtar for arisus or whatever, only with the consent of both of them. Here it doesn't have to be necessarily with the consent of both of them, because what if one of them says he wants it written down and the other one doesn't? Rather, what we mean is it has to do with the das, it has to do with the knowledgeable for them. If you're going to write it down, if you're going to write down whatever the story therein is, and the Gemara is now going to discuss what it is, both of them have to know that it's being done. Because otherwise, you're going to have one that's going to be written down, and one of them is going to have it, and the other one is not. And that can't work. So, my story therein, what is the definition of story therein? Hachotagimu, here in Bavel, they explain it means story tanosa. It means stories where each side writes down what tainus they have. Not, they don't write themselves. Actually, the Rashbam says the sofrei adayonim, the court reporters, write down each side tainus. The point is that once it's written down, neither of them can retract from any of these tainus. While it's still verbal, a person can make a taina and then he can say, you know what, never mind that taina, I have a better one or whatever. Once it's written down, they can't go back.
That goes to Beit Din afterwards.
We'll learn that. We'll learn that in Sanhedrin. You have a couple of different opinions of Tanoim over there.
Whether
no, not necessarily. Okay. So that's one. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba on the Zebur Le'echad and Zebur Le'echad. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba says that Shtore Beirin of our Mishnah, or where you have, you're going to have a Zabla Beit Din, where one Baal Din picks one Dayan, who he figures will be more favorable to him, the other one picks one Dayan, and the two Dayanim together pick a third Dayan, so the Zabla Beit Din, Zebur Le'echad. So then they have a Shtar where they write down that Pliny picked this Dayan, Pliny picked this Dayan, and again, the point is, once it's written down, neither of them can change his mind and say, you know what, I want a different Dayan.
But wait a minute. The draft has to be shown to the plaintiff before it's written, no? So they consent.
No, that's what we're saying. It needs to be midas shneim. Not that they have to consent, but they have to both know that it's being written and it's going to be given to them. But wait.
But how is it written makes a big
difference. Hold on. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm with the Shneim placement. Reb Shimon Gamliel said in the Mishnah, you write two different copies. L'Shneim Kreisman Shneim, you write a different copy for each one. L'Zeba Atma, L'Zeba Atma. Each one, you write their own style with their own tainus. With their own tainus, in other words. So you have Reuben's tainus are written in the style given to Reuben. Shimon's are written in the style given to Shimon. And there's no one common one. So they want to ask, Lema Bekofen Amidas Zon Kamitsky. Should we say that the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel are arguing on the question of whether Beis Din is going to be Kofen Amidas Zon? On the face of it, we should argue that maybe it's Midas Zon to say, I don't want there to be a document out there that has both of our tainus in it. I demand that there should be two separate ones, and you're going to have to pay for yours, and I'm going to have to pay for mine, rather than that we pay jointly towards one document being written. On the face of it, maybe that's Midas Zon. Now, so the Tanakama the Tanakama, in other words, evidence
something for no reason,
just because they fight the other guy.
You have to express exactly what you.
But that's not. But again, you're not the one who is writing. The Sofrei HaDayanim are writing. The Sofrei HaDayanim are writing the Tainus. But he's writing according to what Beis Din. He's writing according to what's going on in Beis Din. He's a court reporter. Now, you're not telling him what to write right now. The point is like this. According to the...
Before the trial.
No. This is during the trial. And by the way, though, it says in Shulchan Aruch, on the basis of this Gemara, on the basis of what we're going to see now in our Gemara, that on the basis of this, we say that you can't require the Baal HaDinim to give their motions in writing. They're entitled, for reasons that we'll see now in the Gemara in a minute, to say that they only want to give their tainus verbally. However, the Sofer HaDayanim will write it down for the Beis Din's record. And also, as we'll see, so the Baal HaDinim themselves can look at it after.
That's the minute.
Yeah, exactly, the minute. So we're not talking about motions, then we're talking about the minute. Now, the point is, therefore, so the Tanakama evidently holds like this. You write one document that contains all the minutes from both sides. If one of them wants to say, and you give one copy that both of them can use jointly. If one of them wants to say, no, I don't want that, I want a copy that has only my tainus for me and a copy that has only your tainus for you, the Tanakhama would argue that's Midas Zayim. It's Midas Zayim to act that way. Therefore, Beis Din will not allow that. We'll force that there's only going to be one set of minutes, and it'll be shared by both of them. Yeah. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel apparently doesn't hold of that. Now, the Ramban points out an issue on the face of it. I mean, what do you mean, Midas Zayim? Doesn't either one of the Baal HaDinim have the ability to say, what are you talking about? If there's only one copy and both of us have to share it, anytime I want to go to him to look it up, he's going to say it's not available or whatever. And so what are we going to do then? So he explains that, right, what we're talking about over here is, let's say, for example, you have that they agree between themselves, for example, that fine, there's only going to be one copy. It will be kept, for example, by Reuben. And Shimon will have, and Shimon is, and Reuben is pledging that he will allow Shimon to look at it whenever he needs to. Or another, the Ramban doesn't mention another possibility that some of the other Rishonim do. Another possibility that's kept in Beis Din, and
that,
either one of them can go and look at it whenever.
The
okay.
Preferable solution.
Whatever. Okay.
How can the minutes can be kept by the one party?
Okay, but nevertheless, you could have one party is more trustworthy than the other, maybe. But wait. Okay. Anyway, the answer is loy. No, you don't have to say that that's the basis of the machloikas. Everybody might agree that when it's a true case of midas daim, that Beis Din will force a person to not be a midas daimnik, but rather to allow it. Rather, Rav Shimon Gamliel's svara over here is as follows: the amale that the one bal din can say to the other, loy nichali hevis chus chagavis chus. I don't want that your zchusin, meaning your arguments, are going to be together with mine in one shtar, the dumbest aloi ki arya arba, because you are to me like a lion lying in wait for its prey. Meaning every time you look at this thing and you see my arguments over there and you see your arguments, you're always going to use it as a further basis for arguing against me next time in Beis Din, because you're going to realize new ideas or whatever.
Right, you don't want to give them too much.
You don't want to give them too much ammunition.
Yeah.
So there. And by the way, I mean the Rishonim point out, and Moshe Yosef points out, and it's brought from there in the Noisy Kalim on Shulchan Aruch, that to that extent the Chachamim do agree with Rishonim Gamliel. They just say, fine, you can avoid that. Not you don't need for that reason two separate sets of minutes, one with one tinus, the other with the other. You can have one, but you keep it by the base, and you keep it by trusted third party or whatever, and that way both of them can refer to it whenever needed. Yeah.
And that's
they can make their own notes if they want, but we're talking about the official notes that the Beis Din.
Maybe the official notes.
No, it's not like they can't. It's not like they can't write themselves notes.
No,
if the person wants to write himself, no. But the point would be, it could still use the notes to refresh his memory. Sure, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah. Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, if a person paid off part of his debt. Now, normally you pay off part of the debt. Normally, what you should be doing is writing a shoiver. You should be writing a receipt for saying that he paid off X amount. In this case, for whatever reason, they didn't bother doing that. Instead, they decided they're going to deposit the shtar by a third party, by a trusted third party, for safekeeping, an escrow, basically.
Why not by the Beis Din?
They could do it by the Beis Din. Beis Din would be a shlish as well, but yeah. The important point is over here, v'omaloi. Now, the loiva says to the malva like this: Im loy nasati l'cha mikan v'ad yom pleni. If I don't pay you the rest of the loan from now until such and such a date, ken loy shtari. Then I want you, the sholish, I want you to give the shtar back to the malva, and it'll be as if he can collect the whole thing all over again. Now, how do we avoid the problem of ribis with that? The Rishonim explain, because it's not, ribis is basically, as we learned back in Bava Metzia, it's agar neter, you're paying extra for the fact that you're extending the time, that there's an extended amount of time where you're not having to pay back. Here the time's not being extended. Here it's more like a one-time fine. That doesn't violate the laws of ribis. But the question is such an undertaking valid? It's a case of asmachta, as we're going to say in the Gemara. So is an asmachta valid or not? The Rishonim talk about the Rashba, for example, talks about the question, the Asmachta could be one of two things. It could either be that we're going to say retroactively that we consider the amount that the first installment that he paid him. Maybe what we'll do is retroactively consider that a gift. Well, in other words, the Asmachta is on the fact that he's being moichel that money and saying, I didn't give it to you as part of the loan retroactively, since I didn't pay off the rest of the loan by such and such a date, it'll turn out that it was a gift, that it was moichel to you effectively. Or does the Asmachta consist of the fact that he's telling him, give him his shtar and let him be able to collect the whole chayv all over again? Whatever, anyway. The reason why the Rashba mentions the difference is because the Rambam holds that an Asmachta, the Rambam holds that something is not an Asmachta if money has already changed hands. In this case, money has already changed hands. So therefore, according to the Rambam, this wouldn't be a case of asnachta. You would have to understand, according to him, that the asnachta consists not of the money that already changed hands, but rather of that you're giving him the shtar, and he's now going to be able to collect the debt all over again, as if none of it was ever paid.
Right.
Okay. Anyway.
Now, in asnachta, we usually negate the whole thing.
And that's what we're going to discuss, okay. And we're going to have a short tomorrow video on that. He gears mandalay nosan, so sure enough, the date came and he didn't pay off the rest of the debt. Rabbi Yossi omer yitzin. Rabbi Yossi says, sure, the sholeh should do what he is told. Give the shtar to the malva and yeah. Rabbi Yehuda omer lo yitzin. Rabbi Yehuda says he should not. So the question is, when Mara says, "Mamai kamutzugi," what's the underlying machlokas?
To give
the shtar or not to give it to the malva, right? Rabbi Yossi sover asmachta kanyir. Rabbi Yossi holds that an asmachta is a valid thing to make a kinyan. This is an asmachta. Now, there's many different opinions among the Rishonim what exactly makes it an asmachta. The Rashbam over here says the idea is that he promised based on something that he's going to do. He's soimeh, that's meloshen asmachta. He expects at the time he makes the tnai that he is going to be able to do it. In the end, he wasn't able to do it. So therefore, that consists of an asmachta. There's different other explanations among the Rishonim. We've talked about a number of times when we've talked about an asmachta. It can be because it's an exaggerated thing. He would say that he should be able to pay off the whole thing, even though he already paid off part of it, as an exaggeration. There's a number of different things.
Until the time comes to be paid or paid, but he doesn't do it. That's not an asmachta.
No, but it is an asmachta because to begin with, no, but it's an uvda, but it's long after he made the tnai.
Well, the
tanai itself was
a ridiculous thing.
When he made the tanai, it was an asmachta. So now that's not koine. We can't say yeah.
It's a ridiculous thing to the person because, like, if I make an asmachta, I'm renting your field, and I say, oh, if I don't plow the whole field by tomorrow morning, I'm going to pay you $1 million. That's an asmachta. You don't have to pay him.
Yes, that's the point. In other words, we don't go according to how it is at the end. We go how it was at the beginning, where at the time he made the tanai, it wasn't he wasn't fully soimich. He didn't expect that he's going to have to actually follow through with it, because he expected to be able to do it.
He was just being.
But wait a minute. Do we need that claim initially when it's made
no.
reasonable or not?
Yeah. Well, that those are the different explanations among the Rishonim. What exactly makes or doesn't make something an asmachta? Is it dependent on that you expected to be able to do something and you thought you would be able to, and in the end you weren't, which is what the Rashbam is saying?
Yeah.
Or is it based on that it's an exaggerated thing, which is how the Rambam understands the asmachta, and then that would define it as an asmachta? Not necessarily, in other words, that it's something you weren't sure whether it's going to happen or not, but the fact that if the penalty is an exaggeration compared to what the
compared to what you really
compared to what you should really have. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Huda holds an asmachta is not kaina. This is an asmachta, therefore that's it. You can't hold him for the time.
And that's the halacha.
Well, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Amar Rav Halacha Rav Yosi. So Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav Baravu, in the name of Rav, says the halacha is like Rav Yosi. Hold on. Tosfos has a long discussion over here on the basis of a Gemara in Nedarim, where Rav Nachman says the halacha is not like Rav Yosi.
But now it's like.
One second. So one of the explanations Tosfos says is that in fact Rav Nachman eventually changed his mind on the basis of the rest of the Gemara.
Like
Ki also l'kamei Rav Ami, and when they came to Rav Ami to ask the question, Amalahu, he says to them, "B'chim me'achar Rav Yochanan melamdeinu pam rishonu shniya halacha Rav Yosi." Since Rav Yochanan, who was Rav Ami's rebbe, already taught us the first time and the second time that the halacha is like Rav Yosi, Ani ma'ase, what do you expect me to do? I can't go against my rebbe. Nevertheless, the ain halacha could have Yosi. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara concludes the halacha is not like Rav Yosi. So an asnachta is not koine. So therefore, the shlish should not be. That's what Tosfos is saying. That may be why Rav Nachman, not Rav Yosi, but Rav Nachman. Why Rav Nachman retracted? Okay. When he says over here that Rav Yochanan taught us Pam Rishonu Shniya, by the way, the Doros HaRishonim explains that Pam Rishonu Shniya means somewhat similar to what we learned a few days ago about Rav Ashi, Madura Kama, and Madura Basra. The same way as we said over there, Rav Ashi was Rosh Hashiva for almost 60 years, so he learned through all Shas twice. Rav Yochanan was also Rosh Hashiva for many years. The Igeres Rav Shur Gavon actually says 80 years, but
Rav Yochanan.
Doros HaRishonim wants to say it was really only 60, but whatever, again, he went through all the Shas twice. So therefore, he says that's what Pam Rishonu or Shniya would mean. Then it would mean the first time he went through, and again when he went through it 30 years later.
Okay. 30 years.
Okay.
No, 30 years.
Next case.
30 years.
Next case. If you miss Kinyan,
yeah, review,
Yaakov pointed out a good point, which is brought in Halacha, that if you make a Kinyan, if it's a case which it is a snasa, but you make on it a Kinyan and a based in Choshuv, then nevertheless you are held to. What is the definition of a based in Choshuv for that purpose? You have a Machloek as a Rishonim, but there is such a way. The Rambam mentions that in Spain they had a certain way when you were going to make something which conceivably could be an asmasta, then they had a certain way of making it, of turning it into a valid Kinyan. There are such things that can be done. Obviously, if that's the case, then
it might not be a Kinyan.
No, it has to be based in Choshuv. It has to be an important basin. What the definition of an important basin is that Yeshayimrim, some of the Rishonim say that a basin Choshuv means only one that has smicha, ishmi piyish, to Moshe Rabbeinu, in which case there is no basin Choshuv now. Okay, anyway. All right, Mishnah says, Mishin nimchak shtar choyv, if somebody's shtar choyv was erased, the Rashbam understands that to mean exactly what it sounds like. In other words, for example, water dripped on it, water damage, or whatever, it got smeared or whatever. The Rambam and many other Rishonim have a different understanding. It doesn't mean it's actually erased now. It means it's on the verge of getting erased. The ink is fading, or whatever. And nimchak means that it's on the way to being getting erased.
Because we'll see.
It's on the verge of getting erased, and you're concerned soon it's going to be gone entirely, and you're not going to have a shtar chayiv. What you do is ma'amid ol ha'edim. You bring edim. So according to the Rashbam, it means since the shtar is already erased, it means the edim have to know when it was written, what exactly it said in it, etc., in order to make a key. According to the Rashbam, it means it's already erased. That's why the Rambam and most of the other Rishonim prefer to say it's not completely erased yet. It means it's on the verge of getting erased, so you're still able, while it's still somewhat legible, while it's still basically legible, with difficulty, you have Edim now at this point, read it to see what it says, and then and they come to Basin, but Oisin like Kiyum, and they make a Kiyum, and they make a Kiyum. Tosfos says that Dafka has to be the Basin that makes this Kiyum. The Edim themselves are not going to be able to do it. The Rashbam actually holds the Edim themselves do it. The Rashbam holds that they come in front of Basin and Basin rewrites the new Shtar, but according to the Rashbam, the Basin is just there to oversee the process, but the Edim themselves are the ones who actually prepare the new Shtar and sign it. According to Tosfos, it's rather Basin themselves that need to do it, and that's the halach. Anyway,
so it's According to the Rashbam,
it's a shtar that has already been erased.
And
therefore you need Edim who know what it said in it. According to everybody else, it means that the shtar is on the verge of getting erased. So therefore you need Edim. It means that the ink is fading. And therefore, while it's still legible, you have Edim read it and come to Basin to have a new shtar prepared. And they make a kiyum. They write like this, Ish Pliny ben Pliny nimchak shtar, Pliny ben Pliny, his shtar was erased, or was about to be erased, on such and such a date. The Rashbam and Tosfos and most other Rishonim hold, once a new shtar is written, it'll continue as if it was from the original date. So the original shtar was written 5 years ago, the shibud will still continue from that date. Rabbeinu Yonah holds, in opposition to everybody else, that no, it'll only be as of now. The new shtar will only take effect as of now. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is like everybody else. Okay. So one possibility, some of the Rishonim say, is the kiyum that we're doing now is written on the old shtar. It's written right on top of the old shtar. If it's written on a new piece of paper, then yes, they would have to rip up the old one. Well, Pliny Adav, and they also write of the kiyum. Pliny and Pliny are the Adim that were originally signed on it. And Tosfos adds, the Pashtus, you also have to add the names of the Adim who actually saw the shtar, the ones who are now coming to Basin to make the kiyum. Some of the Rishonim say that, yes, that's what the Ritva, I think, for example, says. That's indeed. When the Mishnah says a plenty aid of attack, it means both sets of aid. Okay. Turn it up on it. Ezehu kiyum. How do you do a kiyum on such a shtar? They write like this. The most of Tlosa Havena, we three were sitting together as a Basin, on a plenty. Hoitzi Pliny ben Pliny shtamochu kufaneinu. Pliny ben Pliny brought out an erased document in front of us. Again, according to the Rashbam, it means that it's already erased. It already has water damage or whatever. According to the Rambam and everybody else, it means that it's on the verge of getting erased. The ink is fading.
Same thing.
It means mochu can either mean completely erased or can mean on the verge. It can mean on the verge of getting erased. Be in Pliny on such a date, or Pliny Adam, and Pliny are the Adim that were signed on the Shtar originally. Now, im kosov boy who's kachnu la edusim shel edim, if the key, that's all the kiyum has to say in order for it to be a valid new shtar. Now, there can be another detail. The kiyum can add another detail. If it says who's kachnu la edusim shel edim, we got involved. We went and checked into the edus of these edim, the nimses edusim mechuvenes, and it turns out that their edus is valid. Then Ashban explains, we're talking about, in other words, if it means the original edim who signed on the original shtar 5 or 10 or whatever it is years ago are still around, and we brought them into Beis Din and interrogated them, and we checked and everything checked out. Some of the other rishonim say various other possibilities. It can mean that we investigated the edim who say that they saw the original shtar. And they say that not only they saw the original shtar, but they also recognize the signatures of the original edim. That's how Rabbeinu Gershom explains it. Anyway, if you do that, the nimtzes edus and mechuvenes, and their edus turns out to check out goyva, then the person who has the shtar is able to collect on the debt, and he's able to collect from the chosim mishubadim. The enet tzarech lahavi raya, he does not have to bring any other raya about what was in the shtar and that it was a valid shtar, etc. And if not, he is going to have to bring another raya. He is eventually, when he wants to collect, he is going to have to bring another raya about the original date and the amount that it said in the shtar and so on and so forth. Because if Beis Din didn't actually interrogate the original edim according to the Rashbam, or the new set of edim according to Rabbeinu Gershom, then we don't know. The lawyer could still argue with the forged shtar or already paid it off or whatever. So then he would need independent proof of all that.
But it's going to be much harder.
It would be harder. But the point is, so he's better off. But if they can't, then continues the Brisa. Nikra posel, if the shtar was ripped up, meaning it was ripped up. No, we'll see soon how much it would have to be ripped up. Posel, then it is posel, because we have to assume, why would anybody have ripped it up? The pastor, so it's posel. So pay it off or whatever. Niskareya kosher, but if it got ripped by itself, by mistake, for example, then it's kosher. We'll see in a second how we're going to know the difference.
Behind telling the difference. There.
Nimchak oynishtar, oynitashdish, if the shtar is erased or smudged, imbishume nikir kosher. If you can still see enough of the original writing, if you can still see the trace of the original writing, then it's kosher. Nikra or niskareya. What's the difference? How can we tell? What's the definition of it was ripped, where we say it's possible? It was ripped by human agency, where we say it's possible, versus it was ripped accidentally, we say it's kosher. Amar Rav Yehuda, nikra keresh al Beis Din. The word nikra means it was ripped the way that Beis Din rips it. Niskareya means keresh enish al Beis Din. Niskareya means it was ripped in the way that not in the way that Beis Din does. What is the definition of a rip the way Beis Din does it? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, like this. Mokam Edim, or Mokam Azman, or Mokam Atorah. If it's ripped through the place in the shtar where the Edim are signed, and the place where the date is written, and the place of the Torah, of the basic details of the shtar, like the name of the Malva, and the Loiva, and the amount, or whatever, then that's a Kera Beis Din.
I'll say it again.
It's ripped through the place of the Edim, the date, and the Torah.
Now, where is that on the sheet?
Well, the date would usually be on the top. The edim are going to be at the bottom.
The edim would be here, but right here.
Yeah.
So it's ripped here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's got to be ripped.
Not necessarily. It could be one rip over here, one rip over here, one rip over here, whatever. Abaya omer shesi ve'erev. Abaya says that it means it's ripped shesi ve'erev, lengthwise and widthwise. Like an X.
Like in the reaching each other?
Ah, so actually, the notes of Caleb on Shulchan Aruch say that if it's ripped into four pieces, the way we do at the oil, there's no question it's possible. Here we're talking about even if the pieces are still attached together, but it's ripped through, the Shach talks about it's ripped through the whole written area, some of the other notes of Caleb say it doesn't even have to be that much or whatever, then that shows that it was a Kera Beis Din. Some of the Mephoshim say that these two deists in the Gemara are not necessarily contradicting each other. It can mean one or the other.
Yeah.
If it's either one, if it's either ripped through the Makam Ha'edim, Makam Ha'zman, and Makam Ha'torah, or it's ripped in the middle, Shefi Ve'edim, either way that would be considered a Kera Beis Din, and it shows that it's possible. As a practical matter, I guess we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, but as a practical matter, nowadays, for example, when they give a get, they usually do that right afterwards. Right after they give a get, they rip it with a kerabes in shesi ve'erev. So now it's possible, and then they give the woman a, not a shogah per se, but an unofficial, not unofficial, but a document that says that she received a get on such a date and such a date. The reason why we do that, and that way she has it as a proof that she can remarry, and It's not because she might reuse the get a second time. She can't anyway. It has a date on it and has her first husband's name. The reason rather is because we want to avoid the problem that later on that get may be found and some rav or talmid chacham or whatever may find a reisa, may find some questionable thing in that get. Then that would call her divorce into question, and then therefore have problems later if she wants to remarry or whatever. So for that reason, I think it goes back to the times of the Rishonim already, the minhag developed to do that. We do a kera based in on the get. That way it's possible. That way nobody's going to use it. And that way nobody's going to look at it. Who keeps the torn piece? The pastor's based and takes it back. I don't know. And then puts it in shame. I don't know. Maybe I guess they're putting it in shame. I guess they can probably just throw it away. I don't know. But whatever. This way it's made possible. And as far as that she should have a proof that she can remarry, you give her a receipt from basically saying that she received a get on such a thing that doesn't need the dinim of a get or whatever. So therefore nobody's going to find any reyes. So nobody's going to find any problem with it. And that's that.
Oh, so what you're saying is if she presents the original get, then some wise guy would say, oh, this isn't kosher.
Exactly.
Look, this is smudged, this letter.
Yeah, whatever. Or this name should have been spelt differently, or whatever, yeah.
Well, being that if it's kept after a certain while, it will deteriorate.
I don't know, it's not even talking about deterioration. You can have sometimes, I mean, in general, when you write a get, you try to satisfy the opinions of all the posts, but you can't always. So inevitably, you may have some little detail over there that's